Hello, and welcome to episode 69 of Entertainment of Excellence, the podcast where we talk about films, TV, all of it. Hi, I'm Ollie.
I'm Tom.
And I'm Ben. And
today we're talking about the 1991 film, Crannatelli, aka USSR Lord of the Rings. This will contain spoilers.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, the sound you may have heard at the end of our intro there is rather similar to the one that Gollum makes in this movie. So that's a nice way to bring us into talking about some of this film, some of the changes that were made.
Absolutely.
Shall I give a brief plot summary?
Oh, please do, because this was a plot.
It was. Now, some of you may be familiar with your classic Lord of the Rings plot. As we all know, we open with the Song of the Summer, an absolutely banging tune that describes how many rings went to how many people in the different places. Doesn't really describe what it's for or any of that.
It does slap.
And then obviously we get the shot of the narrator who gives us a little nod. Yep. Straight back to the song. And then to the narrator. And we hear about, you know, Bilbo Baggins has this ring, but he's bloody old now. He's 111 or 111. And so he needs to leave, and then he gives the ring to Frodo, and then Gandalf comes and is like, Frodo, this ring is, this is a bad ring. You need to throw it in the fire. And he's like, oh, okay. So then they go off with his friends, Sam, Merry, and Pin.
Pin.
Not, it is Peregrine Tuck, but not known as Pippin in this. It's mainly Pin.
Pin.
And then they go off, you know, they meet Strider in that pub, and then they keep going. Then they go to Rivendell, and they meet Legolas, and then they go to the Mines of Moria, and then Gandalf dies, quotation marks. And then they meet Galadriel, and then they kind of all disband after Boromir tries to take the ring. And then Frodo leaves with Sam. And that's kind of the plot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's dive into the look, I think. The visual style.
Well, it was a very particular style of visuals. One that's known amongst film critics as terrible.
Oh.
Yeah. It looked very... like The one sort of thing that stands out to me is the reliance on green screen technology, which I'm sure for the time it was terrible, but now it looks even more terrible.
I did write down here best green screen I've ever seen, so I highly disagree with you.
Oh, good to know. Well, the thing is, like, I know it was low budget, but like, my God, I don't even have anything to say. That's just my entire point.
Well, you know, I think when they actually had sets, they were, you know, okay. Like if I went to my local theater and they were putting it on as a play and they had those sets, I'd be like, oh
yeah,
that's pretty good.
It did just feel like a play, didn't it? Because a lot of it was just sat at table type thing.
And it's interesting the things that they do with it, where it does feel quite play-like in that they really don't like do much. There's a lot of sitting around and long transitions between scenes when they are doing Fellowship of the Ring in 2 hours. And they leave a lot of dead space for something that is done in 3 hours in the theatrical cut, but Peter Jackson felt like he actually needed 3 hours and 50 or whatever.
Yeah, that's so weird that like it feels like there's so much empty space despite them having to get cram quite a lot in. I mean, but if it was a play, you wouldn't be able to get all the shots of them riding horses through the snow, would you?
That's true. You wouldn't be able get them riding the horses alongside tire tracks in the snow. And that would be tragic. And you also wouldn't be able to get the zooms in on the candles.
Mm.
Now, at first, I actually wrote a note down because I was like, they're using a zoom into candle to represent a transition back to the narrator, and then they zoom into the candle to move back. But I think they did it maybe twice, and then they just started zooming in on candles and with no apparent reason, and it didn't go back to the narrator, and then it just started cutting back to the narrator, and there was no zoom in on a candle or anything. They just did it.
The director just likes candles.
Well, I think it's either that or, it must be that because they started doing it randomly. Or they decided to do it to cut to the narrator, but they kind of forgot.
Maybe.
And just thought it was a cool transition.
Yeah, they got bored, I think. They did it once. They were like, that was quite a lot of effort, actually.
Don't want to overdo it.
Yeah.
It'd be a bit trite, you know?
It would.
Don't want to do that. Another thing to get onto about the look, I think, which is relevant, is the casting.
We were talking about this beforehand, and, canonically, Frodo is 33, which is something like 18 in like human years. This man does not look 33 in human years. He looks like 40 or something. And the rest of the cast are all a bit older than you'd think too.
Yeah,
except Gandalf.
Gandalf just looks like, in the Peter Jackson version, he's like this old wizard who's seen lots of things. This is just a guy down pub.
This is a guy that will tell you about his progressive metal band that he's in, where he plays bass.
Yes, but he doesn't. He's obviously not very good at bass because he doesn't have the big beard.
No, he just bought a 5-string and thought that made him an expert.
A five string and an Ampeg stack, and he's just like, yo,
check out my band, guys. There's a great bit where he does magic by literally just kind of. What does he do? He kind of just moves his hands a bit.
And then there's the stars that appear.
Oh, yeah. And then they all go, whoa! Oh, my God, it's real. Magic is real.
That was one of the first sort of VFX shots in the film. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, my God, we're in for a treat.
Oh, I knew we were in for a treat as soon as I saw those hobbits dancing.
Oh, yeah. What were they doing?
Great dancing happening and a weird, like, vignette filter.
Yeah,
on
that
it.
Whole intro is like you're in a fever dream. Isn't it?
Yeah, the vignette pops up later in the film as well. I thought it was just like, so there's kind of a bit of a niche reference, but there's an old episode of Doctor Who called The Web Planet, where to create like a otherworldly feel, they put Vaseline around the camera lens, and it just looks horrible. That's what this looks like. But it's like someone smeared Vaseline in a circle around the edges, but kept the center in focus.
It's definitely a choice, and it cut back to those hobbits dancing quite a lot in the intro, and started playing that song. And I was losing my absolute mind. I couldn't stand anymore.
Yeah.
And one thing that I loved about the intro is that when Bilbo's having this fun party and he stood on this little stage, and then he like brings up Merry and Pippin, and they stand up and they're absolutely massive. I was like, how are they going to make these guys hobbits? And the trick is they don't. They're normal size.
Yeah.
Apart from that one scene where they're eating.
No, that's with Tom Bombadil. Yeah, they do. Who is a giant.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Where he's just like looking way above them. Like, no one ever looks at each other in this film. They're always just like looking in the complete wrong place, because there are times when they do try and play with the perspective a bit, and it just does not work at all. Because they just don't think about things like that, like where they'd be looking.
Oh. And also like properly green screen.
Yeah.
Keying out the background, so you see like bits of it behind them. It's beautiful. And the costume and makeup is definitely a choice. Like, is it Sam that has this weird, it's almost like drag makeup on?
Yeah,
yeah,
like massive eyeshadow
and like lipstick and everything.
Yeah.
Is that in the book in some description.
Yeah, I think it is actually. Yeah, yeah. I think that Tolkien goes in and like gives him a drag name, and he goes on a series of RuPaul. Doesn't last very long, but you know.
Mm. That's so sad. Justice for what's his drag name?
What's Samwise Gamgee's drag name? Oh no, I didn't think this far ahead.
I think they mean you don't remember from the book.
I don't remember. Yeah. I don't remember. It was. Oh no,
I'm trying to think now.
Sam Osa. I think that's quite.
Sam Osa.
Yeah.
Gamgee.
Yep. Yep.
Justice for Sam Osa.
Justice for Sam Osa. Pin. With like the weird, it's almost like it's not a mullet because the hair goes all the way around. It's like helmet hair and the glasses. And he's always carrying it. Like he looks like a librarian. He doesn't look like a cheeky scamp that goes off smoking root weed constantly.
Yeah.
Root weed? What is it? Is it root weed? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
He just looks like a librarian, basically. They all have such weird hair. I don't know how to describe this. The hair is odd. It must be a wig, right? All of them? They must be wearing a wig.
I think so. Because, like, imagine just going around your daily life with that kind of hair. It'd be a choice.
It would definitely be a choice.
Did Frodo... He kind of gave me Rowan Atkinson in Blackadder vibes. He kind of looked a bit similar.
I thought that as well.
Yeah.
My dad walked in whilst I was watching it. He thought I was actually watching Blackadder.
What did he think of it when he kept watching? Or did he not?
Oh, I only saw like a brief scene. That was enough.
And he thought it was the comedic prowess of Blackadder. Yeah. Wow. That's stunning praise. Also in the intro, we get treated to Gandalf describing the tale of Deagol and Smeagol.
Yeah, so I wrote down a few notes about the thing, and one of them is just gay Smeagol ?
It definitely seems like that, because they're very lovey-dovey with each other.
Yeah, they called each other like... was it my love?
My love, darling,
dear.
I feel like sweetheart at one point.
Yeah. So I guess kind of... based USSR.
everyone's
really sort of affectionate to each other in the books, but like, you know what, that's actually kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, if you think that in the Peter Jackson trilogy that like Frodo and Sam have a kind of romance going on, then you need to watch this for Deagol and Smeagol.
For like the 30 seconds they're on screen.
And the transformation into Gollum, I think we've been so used to the Andy Serkis Gollum voice that we forgot that that wasn't like a standard.
Yeah, that's true.
And also just the fact that like what Gollum looks like as well.
Yeah, weird green. I don't hate the green seaweedy look.
No.
I'm not against it either. It's just really odd coming from the Peter Jackson version, sort of knowing that he looks like that.
Yeah, it's almost weird to imagine a time before that was sort of in the zeitgeist and people had different ideas of what the characters look like.
But I think they had illustrations, because I've got like a version of the books that all like have illustrations, and one of them has Gollum, but I've forgotten what it looks like. One of the earliest illustrations of Gollum I remember, I think he's like this big hairy thing.
Right.
Or not big, but he's definitely very hairy.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's in like The Hobbit. But they basically make Gollum sound like Chewbacca.
Mm.
I swear at one point he just goes... I was like, oh my God.
It's the E of E reference. They were making this film just for us. So they decided to put the reference in. So our fans will get it.
Did you also like when Gandalf was doing his explaining and Frodo went, "But Gandalf... who is the Lord of the Rings?"
That sounds like a joke, but that is an actual line from the film.
I really liked that. I also forgot that when Gandalf was doing his magic, disco music was playing, which is pretty fun. There's a lot of strange music choices throughout this.
Okay, I'm just looking through my notes. There's one that just says, your grandmother, stop lying to me, pal. Which is just...
What? I don't remember that at all.
There was... So the version we watched is on YouTube, and I think it's probably legally all right because it was lost media. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of versions on YouTube. There's the one we watched was split into two parts because that had better English subtitles. So there was obviously some stuff that sounded a little weird through the translation, but
I think it was mainly pretty good.
It was, yeah, compared to a lot of the other movies we've watched on YouTube with subtitles.
Yes.
It was a much higher standard. It's just stuff like that. Your grandmother, stop lying to me, pal. Just got... And then there's another one where it was, it is me, the old willow. I am putting the everlasting sleep on you.
A lot of people in this just kind of go like, it's me. Sauron appears in the pool with the eye. And you know, in the Peter Jackson one, that looming eye is terrifying. When it appears, it just makes ominous noises. In this, an eye appears in a pool and it goes, it's me, the Dark Lord Sauron. Get out of here.
It just looks like a weird little squelchy thing.
I would squish that little eyeball.
I would squish that little eyeball.
Man, that what a time. The eyeball, I loved it when that appeared on screen and started talking. I think that was maybe my favourite moment. It was just
tragic we never got the other two to see. Oh, that would have progressed.
Yeah, that's the thing. Do you think they ran out of budget, or if it wasn't like a big success or anything?
Well, they just said The Keepers, which is a fantasy based on a novel by J.R.R. Tolkien. It didn't even look like they had plans to.
So maybe it was just a standalone thing, which is, again, really odd because The Fellowship of the Ring, even though it does have an ending, it leaves so many unanswered questions.
Yeah.
But
yeah, because it is difficult to do it as a standalone because all of it is talking so much about how they need to throw this ring into the fire and destroy it. And then just kind of, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things about making it a standalone is that they, as we mentioned before, there's a lot of dead air. And that leads to, I actually wrote down, it takes them 27 minutes to leave basically Frodo's house. Originally, I wrote The Shire, then I realised they definitely weren't out the Shire. Then I wrote Bag End, and then it turns out that the pub they were in was still in Bag End, I think. Because I didn't realise that they seemed to go to a pub initially before they go to the one where they meet Strider / Aragorn. Because yeah. I remember them going to one.
Just doing a pub crawl.
Yeah, they were basically doing a pub crawl, which makes sense for hobbits, to be honest. But that kind of pub crawl thing emphasize one of the things that made me realize how much I liked Peter Jackson's and one of the things he did great, because in this I hated the hobbits. It was so annoying.
Yeah.
And it's impressive. It's a difficult line to tread because they do have to be very naive and a bit stupid.
Yeah. A bit childish. And
yeah, but you have to kind of be on their side of this, that the world is scary. Like, you have to be doing it from their perspective. But in this, I just hated them, and they were clearly being idiotic, and not in a oh, but they're my cool quirky friends idiotic way, which is what I feel like with the Peter Jackson ones. I just didn't like them.
No. I didn't feel like they had many sort of redeeming or even just positive character traits. I think it was just like, you, because I've read the books and watched the films, and it's like I have this idea in my head of who these characters are. Mm. You know, I like the character of Frodo and the character of Sam and all of these people. But if this was my first watch, I just feel sort of no attachment to any of them, really. Because
they also didn't feel very distinct from one another. There was like,
no,
just the same personality,
it was just like there was a bunch of lines written to progress the story without any real thought to the characters.
Yeah, because one of the true tragedies is that we don't really see Frodo and Sam be friends at all.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
It's like when Sam ends up with Frodo at the end, it's just kind of like he happened to be there.
Yeah.
So and Frodo even says, like, we were always going to be together, and it's like, this wasn't...
exactly. It's almost like they skipped over that because they were just like, oh, well, people kind of know that from the books and project it onto it. But they don't make any effort themselves to really display that friendship or progressing or anything. It's just
and I think
from
the
point
thing,
A to B, basically.
I think the thing about visual media is that it's its own art form. So the best sort of films and, I mean, whatever this was made for TV, I guess.
Yeah.
They don't rely on you having read the source material. They'll take creative liberties and all of that stuff, but they'll do it to kind of make you fall in love with the characters based on what you see, which is what I think Peter Jackson did like really well. Mm. By sort of humanizing all of these characters and giving them their own like personalities, highlighting the friendships and all of that. And then there's this where it's just like, oh yeah, let's get rid of this ring because it's bad. Bilbo, oh, that ring is bad.
That's one of the things I wrote is that if I'd watched this, I would have had no idea what was actually going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they just kind of say who the rings go to, but like, so I rechecked the book because I've not read the books in a while. I've seen the movies loads and rewatched them recently-ish. But like in the films, it opens with this long prologue detailing all that has happened, like how the rings came into being, and then that battle
so
where they defeat Sauron and Barovia. And in the books, I checked, and it does open in the same way. But so I was like, okay, I'll flick to the Gandalf explainer section, and in that, he actually does go into like how everything happened and the backstory of the power that the rings can bring and this war that's happened, and that you can tell it has this impact on the world. Whereas I guess they didn't have time to do that because they wanted more Hobbit dancing scenes.
Yeah.
So instead Gandalf just literally kind of goes like, the ring is evil.
Yeah. It's literally don't go any further beyond just that superficial thing of people being tempted by it, but it doesn't really ever go into depth of why. And as you said, it's not to do with a, like, this isn't a short film by any means.
No, it's 2 hours.
It's 2 hours.
So they could have padded that out a bit more rather than just having filler.
Yeah.
Because I think it's quite easy to sort of watch this and start talking about how good the Peter Jackson version is. And you know, I've watched the films. I've only watched them through once, but I'll definitely be rewatching them. And it's like, I knew they were good while I was watching them.
Sometimes like, you need something that's the same but worse.
Something like this just made me fall in love with the Peter Jackson version more. Because it had that, like, even at the start of the Fellowship of the Ring, it had that perfect balance of, like, real stakes, real, like, danger, and a sense of sort of tension that's being built, but equally you have the moment where the hobbits are being a bit quirky and there's the family drama with the Sackville Bagginses and Gandalf being like whimsical, and then you know and you have enough to actually relate to these characters, whereas here you're sort of dropped in into this like, this guy, who is he? His 11th birthday. Cool. Okay. Who are all these people? Why is he wearing a ring?
Yeah.
Why is that ring bad? Why does he call it my precious?
It's just so bizarre, and it doesn't, like, the Peter Jackson version, I think, perfectly does set up the Shire as feeling so cozy and warm, which means that you feel the danger when they start to go out.
Left it.
This encroaching like doom, and you constantly see the mountain and the eye like from the distance, and it's like, ooh. So like, as this goes on to later movies, as the eye like gets close and is looming over the moor, you feel this terror, whereas in this, I don't know, I didn't really think they were ever gonna die.
No. To be fair to it, I feel like a lot of the restrictions are placed on like having a low budget, and also just like the fact that none of the characters come across as that interesting or distinct. Is some of the acting is quite poor. But
how could you?
But the other side of that is like, well, why even attempt it? Because it's such an ambitious project to undergo, adapting these huge, this like epic book series. Like when Peter Jackson
language
did it
as well.
Yeah, well, that added. But like, it's the type of thing that you're either going to go fully for it, or it's not going to turn out well. And you know. it's just a bit of an odd choice of having a low budget, like trying to accomplish something this epic, really.
Mm. One thing I feel like we're piling on too much onto this poor thing, and I feel like we need to say that there are some positives for the die-hard Tolkien fans out there, because you do get to see an on-screen depiction of Tom Bombadil. That's right.
Peter Jackson was too scared.
Peter Jackson was too scared to depict him on screen, but he does actually take up a fair bit of runtime within this version.
And to be honest, that was probably my favourite part.
Yeah, Tom Bombadil bit was great.
It was, yeah.
Tom Bombadil was the only character who I think was acted quite well.
Yeah. Mm. He had like a certain charm to him.
And they made him big, which is nice. They did his song was kind of a banger.
As with all the songs,
every time he would show it up nearby, there'd be people going like, "Yeah," like in the song.
Yeah,
and then they'd go, "Tom Bombadil, Tom Bombadil."
Tom Bombadil.
And then my only gripe with the Tom Bombadil section is that he teaches them a song so that they can call him back, and then when they call him back, they don't use the song; they just shout Tom Bombadil. And I was
pretty
so
upset about that.
I was tragedized, honestly. Mm. And they also, the other section, I've forgotten what it's called now. It's basically when they're in the swamp, and then it's called the Barrow. I can't remember. I'm sorry, I'm not a true Tolkien diehard fan.
Get out.
Ben's read one page of the Silmarillion.
Yeah. Oh my God. That makes up for you only seeing the film as once.
Yeah. But that one page is...
Oh my God. It's basically when they're in the bog and then there's the spooky thing with the white cloth and the painted face going like...
Oh, right, yeah.
That's also not in the Peter Jackson movies. To be honest, that bit was a bit scary.
Mm.
It was very silly. I sent a photo of it to our E of E group chat, Top Secret, but I sent a photo of it because it did look silly. But then it started to just get kind of surreal, and as a David Lynch fan, I was like, actually, he would do this.
Yeah.
It got a bit spooky.
Yeah, there were bits of this that were so surreal, like especially when they had the flare on it. It was like a bit unsettling to me.
It's quite.
I don't think that's what they were going for. Well, they were in that scene, to be fair.
That scene, it was the go for it, so it worked.
Yeah, that's why that was my favourite sequence.
Yeah. Unfortunately, one thing I do have to say is that this film has fallen victim to wokeness.
No.
Never.
Because they made Legolas a woman.
I could take Gollum being gay.
I was liking this film. I was invested in it.
I mean, that is shocking, really. I couldn't believe it. Soviet Russia as well.
The US are very progressive.
They already had the token gay characters.
Exactly.
I know. And then
Deagle and Smeagol.
Is the other person actually called Deagle in the books?
Yes, he is. Because
I know he is in the movie, but I was like, I don't remember them being called Deagle and Smeagol. I remember Smeagol.
You know, this film came out in 1991. Do you know what year the Soviet Union collapsed? Do you think it was too woke? They couldn't handle it.
What year did the Soviet
Union? 1991.
No way. Yeah.
This was the omen of the end times.
Wow, this is what did them in, was paying for this film.
Yeah, that's why they couldn't make the other two.
They were so broke, and then they threw all this money at this Tolkien adaptation as a last-ditch effort to redeem themselves.
Wow. I mean, fair enough.
I think it's a good thing to represent the end of the US. So,
I think when the United Kingdom collapses, we should try and do the Two Towers.
I don't like your use of when. What have you got planned, Ben? Oh, no. Oh, I mean, it was great to see Tom Bombadil finally.
Oh, of course.
Oh, he is the keeper of the old woods.
Bomb Tombadil.
How about the Gandalf, flashback thing where he just covers his eyes, and then you get the birds, the eagles.
What
a scene.
Oh, where he's like clearly just kind of stood flapping his arms or something, and then there's and then they've superimposed an eagle on him.
Oh, that was
and
beautiful.
Then that's superimposed on a green screen background. It was so good.
Oh man.
Now I feel like we've touched on the soundtrack, but I want to specifically talk about the Ringwraith theme. When the Dark Riders, as they call them in this, appeared.
Yeah, that was...
It did like sci-fi synthwave music.
Yeah. Well, a lot of this sort of soundtrack sounded like it was early sort of BBC Radiophonic Workshop type stuff.
Yeah. And it had like 80s like power metal vibes. Like the guitar would come in and be like...
That was so jarring.
It felt a lot sort of like 70s Doctor Who music, which is so weird because this was the 90s.
Yeah.
It's like you'd already had a lot of like real development in the sci-fi space, and the sci-fi soundtracks getting more and more sort of like experimental and stuff. But by this point, that sort of stuff sounded like... It makes it sound dated.
Yeah.
it's just really weird because you've come from the 80s with like stuff like the Tron soundtrack and you know, I mean, I know it's a Soviet Russia, so like they probably didn't have much budget, but like, come on.
There was such weird choices, and the most annoying when they actually had like more fitting music, like with the flute. It was just really annoying.
Mm.
It had nothing on. Oh, the score for Lord of the Rings. You know,
again, it's another thing that makes you appreciate the Peter Jackson version, specifically the music in it as well. It's so good.
I wish they had more guitar solos in the Peter Jackson trilogy. That's the thing it was missing.
Yeah. Maybe that's what made The Hobbit fail.
That's it. They should have had Eruption by Van Halen just put there in the middle.
And just some random disco music in there as well.
Yeah, while magic's happening.
Yeah.
If you played some Bee Gees, it would have been absolutely perfect.
So when was this refound?
So, well, I don't know it precisely, but I know that it got popularised a couple of years ago, I think. We're just getting our expert researchers on the matter right now.
Well, my conspiracy theory is that after The Hobbit wasn't too well received, Peter Jackson went and dug it out himself to be like, as if people didn't love Lord of the Rings enough. You know,
that's the thing. So you know when someone new comes to make an adaptation of something, there's often a sort of thing of like, oh, have they watched the previous ones? Are they going to be faithful to them? Like there was a big thing when like the Wednesday series came out. It was like, oh, is it going to be faithful to the 1991 version of the Addams Family?
Yeah.
Or the, you know, the 60s one.
Mm.
Do you think Peter Jackson sat down and watched this and went, you know what? I can do better.
He didn't even bother reading the books. He's just
like, he based it on this?
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
he improvised with the second two.
It's interesting you bring up The Hobbit because one of the problems with The Hobbit, especially as Sir Ian McKellen will attest, is that Ian McKellen specifically hated working with the green screen and had a big rant about it.
Green screen looked good.
Well, what I'm saying is maybe green screen is the downfall of any Lord of the Rings related project.
Well, so I've got my expert sources up here. Won't mention them to you, but...
Wikipedia.org.
Can't be giving away our secret sources.
Oh, I thought that was like a Soviet Russia-specific website that does research.
Wikipedia.ru. So it was broadcast in 91 by Leningrad Television, then was lost, and then was rediscovered in 2021.
Ooh.
So...
In the first paragraph, in that top paragraph, it actually says that it includes the scenes with Tom Bombadil and Goldberry, which were omitted.
Yeah. So here's the Guardian article that was reporting on it being refound.
By Andrew Roth in Moscow, it seems. So he was on location.
He got to be.
Wow. Oh, I just want to make sure we credit all of our sources because of... recent events.
I know logically it makes perfect sense, but like just thinking this was only 10 years before Peter Jackson's version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just mind-blowing. Difference like time and budget makes.
Although it's crazy because I can't remember. I don't actually know how he managed to get that trilogy made because I think he just asked for infinite money from like New Line Cinema, who didn't really, what their biggest thing was like Nightmare on Elm Street or something. So they hadn't done anything before that was like massive, and they just gave him infinite money, and he was like, I'll promise it'll be good.
Yeah, I mean, like even the second and third films, you've already had the first one as a proof of how successful it is, but he made them off the ground.
He made them all three at the same time. Together.
Really?
Yeah. So he got lots and lots of money, and they didn't have any proof.
That's insane.
So at least shot them all at the same time.
Because the only adaptations before this, there was this one. There was the 1978 animated version as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've forgotten his name. A YouTuber did a video on.
Folding Ideas.
Folding Ideas. I was thinking Floating Ideas.
No.
So what does that cover, that one?
That's The Hobbit, I think, isn't it? Is the animated one The Hobbit?
I think it's The Hobbit. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's The Hobbit.
Fact check this.
Sorry, we're going to get our expert researchers back on the case.
You should go paid extra for this, Ben.
Yeah,
I didn't mention that as a special guest.
Yes, the 1978 version was Lord of the Rings, mostly Fellowship, right, with bits of the Two Towers.
Oh, right. Oh, it is Bakshi's. Oh, it is Lord of the Rings. I thought it was The Hobbit for some reason. I think that's another one.
There is a Hobbit adaptation as well.
Yeah. But I'm still waiting for that Silmarillion adaptation, Peter Jackson. Well, you know, get the first page done and, you know, just release it as a short. That's all you need.
No, I think you could pad that out. Like a page of film.
The Hobbit.
Yeah.
Well, it's like saying adapt the Bible, isn't it?
Maybe it's like each sort of trilogy, like the source material gets blown up like three times as much.
Yeah.
So, you know, it'll actually be like only like 10 pages of the Silmarillion padded out into a 10-hour trilogy.
Isn't that what Rings of Power is or something?
Oh, I forgot that existed.
We don't talk about Rings of Power on this show.
I'd never finished it. I thought it was fine. Sorry. But I think they should do an adaptation of Unfinished Tales.
Ooh.
Yeah. Mm. Which is the true Kilo that Tolkien did. All the things he didn't finish because they probably weren't good enough. I'm just turning back to my notes here, and I want to say that Gandalf the Grey does not wear grey, and Saruman the White does not wear white, and I was so angry. But I was saved by the fact that the actor of Saruman was having the best time of his life.
He was.
He was in that confrontation scene between Gandalf and Saruman. You know what? I would be happy to watch the Peter Jackson trilogy and then substitute that scene in there. Just for that bit, because Saruman in that is like so beautifully like just chewing the scenery. He's like absolutely ridiculous, like evilness against this weird like your cool uncle Gandalf.
Yeah.
and that was one of my favorite scenes of them green screened at the top of this tower and like having a bit of a biff.
Why? Saruman was really embracing his inner Palpatine.
He was. Why do they keep looking straight at the camera?
I don't
know. So many fourth wall breaks, but
they really do look at the camera a lot. And I was like, oh, are they supposed to be talking to me?
Yeah, that's what I thought. But like, where they would have been looking wasn't where the person they were talking to would have been.
So I remember there was a specific one. I think it was when Frodo and Boromir were talking, when Boromir's like, oi, give me the ring, mate. Yeah. I think that one specifically, I got really confused. Yeah, about. I was like, I don't know where they're looking.
Yeah. Like a lot of the times you can sort of tell that stuff was shot where the other person wasn't there. Like I can't remember exactly, but there's like a bit with Frodo where he's looking at someone and then it cuts to them and like they're never in the same shot together.
It's because, you know, they had really busy schedules.
Oh, yeah,
it's
exactly. Like high profile actors.
High profile actors, exactly. You can't expect them to all be there on the same day. You know, similar to those Marvel cameos.
It is, yeah.
They were ahead of their time, really, when they were doing that.
Fourth wall breaks and shooting separately.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was crazy. I also want to mention when we were talking before about characters kind of like just saying it's me, this person, on a similar vibe, when the Fellowship actually forms, because I think we've not properly talked about this when they're with Elrond and stuff, and they all form together.
Yeah,
they say when they all join in, they go, ah, there'll be nine of us, like the Black Riders. There's also nine of them. It's like, oh, thanks.
Thanks for that little bit of exposition we definitely didn't
know. I hadn't worked that out. You know, the script economy in this is so good. No wasted lines. I actually wish they'd added more. I think they're a bit more, like, it felt a bit too rushed. I think they should have said, there's also nine of them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Like shots of each of them as they're yeah. counting. 1, 2, 3.
Wow, that's how many of us there are.
What? 1, 2.
You know, it's almost like this is a kind of parallel between good and evil. So there's nine Black Riders, evil.
Is this still in the script?
Yeah, this is all in the script. And nine of the Fellowship.
So, do you mean Dark Riders?
Oh, sorry. They call them... Oh, yeah. I'm getting mixed up with the Peter Jackson one again. Dark Riders. Nine Dark Riders.
Is that the number that comes after 8?
It is. And what? Do you know what?
I think before that's, 10.
I think that's how many of us there are, actually.
Oh, my God. Do you think there's nine Dark Riders for each of the E of E people?
Oh, now let's count. 1, 2, 3.
Squared.
9. Wow.
And not that film as well.
Oh, it's lucky someone chucked that squared in there. I'm glad we've added squared to the podcast. How are you doing, squared?
You do squared by doing the number. So there's 1.
Now you see
5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times the number. So whatever 9 times 9 is, 27. That's how many people are on the podcast.
9 times 9.
Yeah.
It's 27. Yeah. Cool.
So okay, let's go around with all 27 of us and do our ratings.
27
out of whatever 27 squared is.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Out of 27 squared.
I'm done with this joke. squared is 10. All right.
Wait, I just want to. I've got two more things to say. There's no Balrog. That sucked.
Oh, yeah.
And which meant that they just kind of kill Gandalf off screen. So they go across a tiny bridge and then Aragorn does a head count like they're at a school trip. And then he goes, where's Gandalf? Oh, he says, where's Gandalf? No one responds. So he says, oh, he's dead.
Oh,
he died protecting us. and that I thought was really funny. And then there's also a bit where when Galadriel appears, they get these spooky Elvish women to dance around them. But their voices, I think, it seems like are done by men doing a high-pitched voice.
Yeah.
Mm. Like they're literally going like, oh, yeah. It's like,
what? You can relax, you'll be safe.
And it's like, I can see the women there. Why can't they? Is this to make up for the fact that Legolas is a woman? They've got rid of women.
Go too woke.
Literally got rid of women's voices. I don't even remember Legolas ever talking.
No, I don't think.
No. Yeah. Is there some weird? No, because Galadriel speaks. I was like, is there a Russian rule or Soviet rule where you can't have women speaking on camera?
Maybe they just like ran out of people and then hope no one noticed that it was a woman.
I mean, it's. But
the
possible.
Woman were right there.
I know. And I think at the start as well, like Bilbo's like sister or whatever is just a man in drag.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah, so, okay, I've got through that. That's everything I wanted to say, I think.
Right, now rate it out of 27 squared.
Out of 27 squared?
Which is 10.
Which is 10. 27 squared is 10. That makes it a bit easier for me.
Mm, that's convenient, though.
Yeah.
Praise the numbers.
Well, I think there's at least some benefit to this.
That it makes it was appreciate
fun to watch because it was bad.
Mm.
So, in my mind, that counts for something.
It counts. It certainly counts for something. It attempted something it couldn't do. which was fine. It did, like, the green screen vibe gives me, like, it's like the reverse of Birdemic, where in that it's the bird superimposed on that looks really silly, but in this it's the people superimposed on. But it was fun to watch. I could never tell if I was bopping to the soundtrack or if it was driving me insane.
5.5. That's what I'm going.
Oh, that's quite high.
It's quite high.
That's like above average, isn't it?
No, the average for me is 7.3.
Oh, well.
Nah. It's because when I'm rating something, I'm taking into consideration how much I enjoyed it, as well as objective quality, and I did quite enjoy watching it.
I did as well, but it did drag at certain points.
Yeah, that's my main thing.
Filler, and
I think I'm going to give it a 4.00. Actually, with this 27 squared zeros after.
I watched it at 1.5 times the speed, so
the true way.
Daniel, you haven't done your joke.
My joke? Oh, crap! What was the joke
about the name?
Oh yeah, Cranatelli, because we watched it on the telly. Except I watched it on my phone.
Anyway, 4 point and then 27 squared zeros.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I'm going to go 4.20. 420.
That's good. Hey, put it here. We've just fist bumped for the listeners.
I'm going to bump it down to a 5, I think.
You're going to what? And then we've bumped it. We fist bumped it.
Bang on average. This is the average movie for me. So,
so if you want to know what Ben thinks the average movie looks like, chuck on Soviet Lord of the Rings.
If Ben puts on a 5 as well, it's like the exact same quality.
Oh yeah, true.
Would you rather rewatch this or rewatch Birdemic?
I'd probably rank Birdemic higher, honestly, if I was redoing it.
Because retrospective,
redux review.
Yeah, because it's like you do enjoy watching Birdemic. It's objectively bad, but as an experience, I enjoy it, so I'm going to rate it higher. But this episode isn't on Birdemic, so we can't re-rate stuff yet.
Would you say that the tree-hugging Tom in Birdemic is literally Tom Bombadil?
Oh my god. And there's trees.
Do you think he hugs Treebeard?
Oh my... Wow. That's blowing my mind. But it's too late now to revisit.
There were birds in this. Or one bird.
There was the eagle. So there we go. So I think on average that makes a number. So that's good.
Yeah.
So now we know that if Ben presses watch random or whatever on Netflix, the average movie he expects to get will look like this. So now we all know that.
Yep.
We can move on. Do we have another segment?
We do.
Okay, guys, it's time for recommendations.
I'll play the actual sting over that.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. 69 special.
If we still have it, I don't know where. I'm sure we'll have it somewhere.
Well, the listeners will already know, so this is some dramatic irony for them, isn't it?
Ooh, I guess you could call it dramatically ironic.
Yes, yeah. Or dramatic irony, I think is the term.
Well, actually, it's not time for recommendations.
Ooh.
It's a submission spotlight.
How could I forget?
Oh, yeah,
see, this is another one where we still have submissions to go through, but like we haven't done them.
Oh man,
we've got like tons of indie films in our inbox now, and now we're just like,
We promise we'll get around to them when we have time.
So because we're filming two episodes in one go next week, you won't have any either, unfortunately. Oh. But I think if we can say get a real sort of effort to watch some of these things for like not next episode but from episode 71 onwards, I think then it would be good. So in the meantime, if you want to add your short film or music or whatever, shove it in our inbox, entertainmentofexcellence@gmail.com, or reach out to us on Instagram or TikTok at EAV Podcast. What else have we got? We've got a website called entertainmentofexcellence.weebly.com. What else have we got? We've got a a physical address, which we won't give out on air, but you know, if you want to do a bit of stalking, then you know, as long as it's a good recommendation, I think we're all good with that.
Yeah, that's fine. Send us a poem or something.
If it's not, then we'll track you back down.
Yeah, exactly.
That won't end well.
And why don't you just open an email and write us something specifically for the submission spotlight? Like, you've got no ideas now. Write a poem about the E of E podcast.
Hey, E of E pod. This is a haiku. Very cool.
That very is definitely two syllables.
No, very cool. Okay. Very cool.
That'd be a good one. Yeah. Now you can claim that as your own and send it in.
We'll make it public domain. That you can do whatever you want with it.
Yeah. So, are we ready to find out if the recommendations time jingle is in place?
So, time to play the jingle again if it exists.
Again.
But if it doesn't exist, then we're not playing it again. We didn't play it the first time. So, yeah.
So here it is. It's time for recommendations. I have something to recommend.
Do you? Would you call it a recommendation?
I would. And I think it's maybe something that we've not recommended before. As in a form of media.
I was going to say we mostly do new ones each week.
No, it's not me recommending the same movie every time, I promise. It's an ongoing monthly comic series.
Nerd.
Yeah. We've not had that as a recommendation, I don't think.
I don't think so. We've had graphic novels before, but nothing ongoing, I don't think.
So there you go.
So yeah, wow. New form of media, guys.
So it's called Kill Your Darlings, which I got because I was like, I want to start reading a monthly comic. So I did some research. I did some beep, 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 beep. I did some hot upcoming comic series articles. Ignore Ben. I'm going to keep going. I've not been told to stop. some hot comics articles, and it was from Image Comics, and I just got into that phrase for writing because for some reason I started getting really excited about editing. I don't know why. So I was like, oh, Kill Your Darlings, that's what you have to do in writing. And I liked the idea of the, I liked the concept and vibe, and now that I've read three issues of it, I think there were four out, but I've not collected the fourth one yet. I'm hooked. It's very cool. It's got this thing of it's your classic. There is someone that had an imaginary world when they were a kid with like that they played with their teddy bears and stuff, but it is seeping into the real world and there is some kind of tragedy that they need the original person back. But something happens at the end of the first issue which I was completely blindsided by. I didn't think that they would do. Well, I didn't think it actually happened until I started reading the second issue. I was like, oh no, they did do that. But yeah, it's great. It's got this weird vibe where all the real world stuff is very washed out. And then when you get into this fantasy world, it's like so colourful and bright, which is great when you then see a teddy bear ripped in part and there are actually organs like on the path. And it's like in these bright, like the bright pink teddy bear and then it's bright red blood and stuff. It's great stuff. But I'm very excited to see where that goes. It's like the writers are two new people to writing and comics, I think. But the artist, I believe, is fairly well established and the art's great. So it's cool to see that they're kind of being overseen by Image Comics, and Image has a big thing about trying to be good for comics creators. So I hope that this keeps going and I hope it goes well because I'm enjoying it. So yeah, Kill Your Darlings. Find it at your local comic book shop.
Very nice.
Which for us is OK Comics. I'll give them a shout out. That's another recommendation.
Yeah.
They're holding on to those issues for me. Thanks, guys.
Well, so, OK, I have a recommendation, but it's a bit of an odd one because it's not one that, like, I wholeheartedly enjoy, but it is something that is definitely worth going to watch this year specifically.
Ooh,
it's called Steamboat Willie, and it is public domain right now.
Woo!
So yeah, it's the first appearance of Mickey Mouse in cartoon form, and it's like it's sort of 10 minutes-ish long. It's really weird. There's a lot of animal abuse involved. Mickey Mouse goes around and, like, swings a cat by its tail and, like, plays the drums on, like someone's teeth. And, you know, like, there's a scene where there's some pigs, like, little piglets suckling from the mum. And he goes up and, like, pulls them all off and then plays the pig's nipples. It's really weird. It's like, okay, I quite enjoy it for what it is, in that it's like so far from the sort of toned down, like, safe Mickey Mouse we've got currently. Mm. And even from, like, the Fantasia Mickey Mouse from, like, 1940, which was kind of the start of the character as we know him now. But the stuff that's come into public domain this year is really interesting. And I think going forward in the next sort of 20 years or so, some of the stuff that's going to be coming into public domain is going to be really cool. Like, you know, other stuff like House on Pooh Corner, the book, is public domain now. And next year, Popeye the Sailor Man.
Oh!
So it's worth going to watch all of these now, because it's like, I mean, sure, you could obviously find them, like, so you could find them illegally beforehand, but now you are free to do whatever you want with them. So there's so many YouTubers now going, like, Mickey Mouse swinging a cat by its tail for 6 hours straight.
There's one that I will recommend is from the YouTuber Little Joel on his channel, where it seems that he has a mental breakdown.
I've seen that.
Because he just says, we're going to watch Steamboat Willie, but imagine if all of them were gay men. And then just has a breakdown. I don't think he's okay.
That man's not okay at the best of times. Big Joel is fine.
Oh, yeah.
Little Joel.
It was so funny because the most recent Joel-related video was from Big Joel, which was called Fear of Death. And it was incredibly intense, moving video. And then I
shed a tear at that.
I know, genuinely, it was so good. And I was, like, crying. And then the next Joel video I watched was then the Steamboat Willie. Imagine if they were gay one. Which, what a contrast that was.
So yeah, it's worth going to watch this stuff. You can find on Wikipedia, there's a master list of all the stuff that's come into public domain this year, and, like, the sort of laws that apply to them. So US laws, there's a list, but others, it's like, you know, death of the author plus 70 years, death of the author plus 80 years, and they're all kind of broken down into categories, which is really interesting because you kind of see all of the change in copyright laws, a lot of which was lobbying by Disney. So, let's go out and enjoy the fact that Disney doesn't own this anymore.
It's kind of funny how Disney had, like, the big anniversary last year and then one of their worst years to date in terms of the box office.
Yeah.
But it'll be on Disney Plus, so it's fine. Why would I go to the cinema, Ollie?
Exactly.
There you go. What's your recommendation?
I'll talk about the Snyder Cut.
Oh, yeah, you watched it, didn't you?
Yeah.
Recommend it?
Not so much, no. But, well, I watched a couple of Zack Snyder things, actually, because I watched Rebel Moon Part 1.
Really?
Children of
Fire.
I
didn't see that on your Letterboxd. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, you're not watching it closely enough, then.
Oh, no, I think I did. Did you give it 1.5?
I think I might have given it a 2.
Oh.
It's not great, to be honest. I mean, it looked interesting from the trailers and stuff, like kind of a Star Wars inspired thing, but it just is extremely derivative and boring. Just overdone, slow-mo, generic action type stuff. So,
can we have a vine boom after every one of those adjectives? Overdone, slow-mo, vine type.
That should be the TikTok content.
But Zack Snyder's Justice League, slightly better. It's definitely better than the 2017 version, which I didn't remember too well, but watching this back, like, a lot of it is similar, but it just, like, gives it a bit more room to breathe. I mean, I think one of the main issues with the original Justice League cut was, like, they tried to squeeze in too many introductions to start off with, because It was basically like the first time being introduced to Aquaman, the Flash, and Cyborg, I think.
Aquaman as well?
Yeah, because his solo film was, I think, 2018.
Oh, right.
So this, like, did that a bit more effectively, and I was kind of enjoying it for the first hour or so, and then... Well, the first 2 hours, to be fair. Like, I had it on DVD, and it was split into two parts. But by the time we got to the second part, it was just like... I don't think they really did a great job of making the villain story any more interesting, because it was literally just Steppenwolf trying to get these boxes.
Because I was thinking, look cooler, Ollie.
It did. It looked so cool, and those dark sides. Thinking about it, like the story itself isn't actually too dissimilar to the Thanos Infinity plot. Like, his big guy trying to get things and put them together to do something.
Yeah.
But it's just so much less engaging, and I think it lost a lot of momentum in the second half, to be honest. Like, it's the type of thing where I can appreciate that he was able to do it and make creative decisions that obviously he was robbed from in the initial cut, but it's, even if like it was in that state to begin with, it's not the type of thing that, like, the studios wouldn't have released that 4-hour cut anyway.
No.
So it's all right in retroactively saying, oh, well, this is what I would have done, but that just wouldn't have been the format it was released in, even if there hadn't been all the other circumstances that led to whatever the mess of 2017 Justice League was. So I guess it might be worth watching like certain bits of it to enhance that experience, but as a whole, it's not the most compelling thing. And also, it's got like the ending, because I think the original Justice League, it has the ending, and then it has a wee, I think it might be in the post credits perhaps, but this is just tagged on at the end. It has the bit with Lex Luthor escaping and meeting Deathstroke, is that his name?
Yeah.
And that's got that, and then it's got the Joker nightmare sequence where Batman says a naughty F word.
Oh.
And it's so cool and epic. But that just like looks atrocious. Like, there's so many bits in this were clearly just done afterwards and like in an empty room with and it just looks so fake. And then there's another ending where there's Martian Manhunter, and it's just like the last half an hour is just how many, well, they feel like setups, but to things looking back at it now after the DC has sort of changed hands and they've scrapped whatever the DCEU was, it's kind of sad just seeing like how these desperate attempts to
set everything up,
which I mean they carry on doing with Marvel, but at least even if those things don't come to fruition, at least it is still ongoing, whereas looking back at it now where it has definitively come to an end and it never had any clear through narrative or anything, it just makes it like a bit pathetic, to be honest. Some pretty good Snyder recommendations.
So that's what you recommend it for people to watch.
Yeah.
Great.
Very interesting.
Are you going to watch the black and white version next?
Oh, of course.
Nice. Oh, that's a shame, because split into two, because for me, the split into two DVD was Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring. Because I only had that extended version, whereas the other ones were theatrical. But for me, if you had two DVDs, I was so hyped, like, because you said it flagging on the second disc, that's tragic. Because I remember getting to the end of the first disc of Fellowship of the Ring and me like, oh, I need to put the second disc in. Oh, this is so exciting. Because I think it's just when they enter the minds of Moria or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh.
Well, this one I was like, hey, this isn't actually too bad. And then I got to the second one, I was like, no, it's not great. But
that's tragic.
That was the most exciting part, putting the second disc in, to be honest.
Wow. Yeah, it's always exciting. But yeah, have we come to the end of the episode?
We've come to the end of the episode. So follow us on TikTok and Instagram at EOV Podcast. And
some great content coming.
Yeah, we need the catchphrase.
Oh, we need the catchphrase of the episode.
Yeah. As opposed to the catchphrase that's not on the episode.
There's three of us, like the Three Stooges. There's also three of them. Because they're called the Three Stooges.
Like the Three Scrooges.
And because they've got three in the name, like the ghosts of Christmas.
All right, okay, roll the episode.
All right, see ya.
Presented by Ollie Luff, Tom Sweeney, and Ben Stinson. Music by Tom Sweeney and Ben Stinson. Audio engineered by Ben Stinson at Longwater Productions. All Rights C. Yar, created by Al Wright, Sr. All Rights, brackets, C. Yar, close brackets, reserved.